Welcome back to episode 3 of Podcast Lost in Space. Once again, we're just going to keep doing introductions. I'm Alexander. I am the creator of all of this craziness. And we won't have Alyssa this week because she's doing some real-life garbage about recruitment for a sorority or something. She'll explain it when she gets back.
Last I heard, she was participating in a underground yo-yo competition that boasts no rules other than the many and various rules of underground yo-yo competitions.
Come on, Doctor. You can't talk about yo-yo competitions.
Oh, yeah.
That's the first and second rule.
And the one who cut in with no camera is...
Dr. Irwin. I am the pinky toe equivalent of the website, if the website were a human body. Alex, of course, being both the brain and the heart behind it.
Wait, what is the pinky toe? The only time I've heard that is you bang it on furniture.
Exactly.
Maybe if we bang equivalent. Doc against furniture, yeah. It'll really, really, really hurt all of us?
Yeah, see, I'm the pinky toe equivalent out of the fact that it's like, I'm good to have, but you don't necessarily need.
But you're really good for balancing.
Yeah, I provide a decent amount of balance, but it's like, if I were gone, no one would be that upset.
All right, and then in the Seahawks jersey.
Right. This isn't a Seahawks jersey.
That's right. That's my bad. In the Sounders jersey. I had to roll deep on the side.
I'm Ryan. I'm the quiet one, I guess, according to your father.
You're also the food one. And yeah. The least adult of us all. In many ways.
Basically. Sorry.
And last but not least.
Hi, I'm Seneca. I'm just going to refer to myself as now the blog mistress that's been yanked into the podcast. Because... I don't really know what I am.
I would say the blog maiden.
Maiden sounds too flowery, though.
I was going with
blog. I want a whip. That sounds
the blog
fun.
Warlock?
No.
It'd be a witch. It'd be a witch, not a warlock.
Blog, okay. Yeah. Sorry. That'd be... Yeah, didn't mean to offend.
The blog matron?
That glass ceiling.
The blog matron?
Blog matron. There you go.
I don't know.
That
doesn't play
well with kids, but... So let's get down to how was everybody's week this week? Anything brand new or exciting or completely boring?
South Park Stick of Truth game, man.
God, did you just play for the first time?
Yeah, I just picked it up yesterday for $10 and I played it for 6 hours. And I just took a lazy Saturday, and absolutely right, that game is fantastic. Fun to play, super funny, especially if you're a South Park fan. It's amazing. But granted, I'm way behind the game, so anyone who knows about it already can like say the same exact thing, that it is a fantastic game on kind of all fronts.
That game made me want to rewatch, watch for the first time all of South Park.
That's a tall order.
It is, because what, they're on their 19th season?
Something like that, yeah. They put so many inside jokes in there. Like, you're able to catch even, like, ones from episodes that you forgot about long ago. And there are so many little Easter eggs and things that even I feel like I don't even remember seeing that episode in that this is a reference to. But I know they're referencing some sort of South Park episode. Which is kind of impressive out of the fact that they're able to create so many jokes and so many pieces of, like, content and, like, just comical characters and still manage to incorporate pretty much everything into this game.
Nice.
You don't even need to watch South Park to laugh and have a good time. I've seen episodes here and there before, but I had never actually watched South Park, like, as a series. And I still was laughing my ass off.
I will say, you have to know you like the South Park humor to enjoy it. As somebody who doesn't really like South Park humor, I've dabbled in that game a little bit, and there are parts of it that are funny, especially when they start making fun of role-playing tropes and all that kind of stuff, because they've gotten really good at making really sharp commentary on not just normal culture, but geek culture as it interacts. But a lot of the other humor, I'm like, yeah, great, it's a poop joke.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, because there's a lot of poop, fart, butts, and all that kind of humor. But there's also, like you said, the tropes, because they do the audio log trope of a guy leaving audio logs explaining how useless audio logs and impractical they are. And I just thought that was hilarious because it's also a commentary on just certain game collectibles that, like, make no sense, like, if they were inside the real world.
Yeah. All right, Sunny.
I might start my job this upcoming Wednesday, and I'm really excited about it! And I got a new game. But you guys probably don't care about it, because it's kind of girly.
No.
Well, so I got the... For those watching who are not aware, or those who are not aware in this group, I am apparently considered a girly gamer, because I like cute games, and if I get to kill things in cute games, I'm especially happy. But this is... Like, when I finally coerced my dad to get me a GameCube, one of the first games that he got me with said GameCube was Animal Crossing, right? So they just came out with Happy Home Designer on Friday, I believe?
Yeah, I believe so.
Because I picked it up at 10 a.m. when I had a 10:15 meeting, and it was an 11-minute drive, but I made it work, and I got to the meeting.
Wait,
Happy Home Designer Animal Crossing?
Animal Crossing Happy Home Designer.
Okay, so it is an Animal Crossing spinoff.
Yeah, it's an Animal Crossing spinoff.
An interior decorating game?
It is actually an interior decorating game for Animal Crossing.
But it's actually, it's enjoyable in a very different way from the normal Animal Crossing for anybody who is an enjoyer of normal Animal Crossing. And I definitely pre-ordered it kind of with the thought in my head of, like, this is not the same thing. This is probably going to be fairly boring to some extent. But because I grew up with that as such a primary game for me, I had to try it because it was a new sort of spin-off from the normal average Animal Crossing game. It's actually decent. It's very amusing.
It's been getting a lot of really negatively mixed reviews of a lot from games journalism because... Like everybody basically else, we play games for challenge and violence and a lot of other things. Not that that's all I play, because I play some other really random games too. But this game, everybody's like, I don't get it. I don't get who would like this, who would play this, from what I've seen on major game media, because it's
very calming. It's well, not that's... a...
That's my question is, like, is it getting, like, is it selling? Is it a very popular one? Are people, like, playing it a lot?
We'll find out.
Well, so it's brand new, and I enjoy calming games. Like, I am somebody who has played Harvest Moon in the past a lot, because when I get into very stressful times during my life, and shooting games no longer provide the catharsis that I need, because it's no longer the anger of, like, I just need to kill things, and, like, this is a healthy way to get that stress out, which sounds bad, but,
no,
you know.
That actually makes total sense.
Yeah, but when I want a calming game, just because, like, I'm prone to migraines, and I've been very fortunate where I haven't been getting them a ton lately, but I want a calming game that's not going to rile me up, or, you know, I just want to have a relaxing afternoon gaming that isn't involving killing things.
No,
it can happen.
Yeah, because South Park is in a very similar vein out of the fact that it's actually very easy. Like, I haven't really been faced with any sort of challenge, and I've been just kind of plowing through the main story mode just because I want to see what happens and treat it as if it's like a whole new season of South Park. But I wouldn't be surprised if this game ends up being popular, the one that you're playing, Happy Home Designer, out of the fact that, I mean, I myself, like, when playing Skyrim, I have the Hearthfire DLC, and in that, I built 3 different homes and designed them as, like, oh, this is going to be the one where I put my warrior armor, and I'm going to put my swords in these cabinets, and already in that game, there is an interior decoration DLC, I used it to the fullest. I got it, and I made everything, got every single achievement on it. I just got sucked in, and so this sounds like they're taking that idea and applying it to other games and just tapping into that casual gamer market in a very neat way.
And along that line, this is one of those games that I... Sorry, Seneca.
That's fine.
It's one of the few games... My mom doesn't play video games. She hates video games in a lot of ways. And this is one of the few games where I would actually probably be like, hey, Mom, check this out, because it has other problems. It's really simplistic, but it's obviously meant for a casual market because of how simplistic it is. But my mom is an interior designer. She would love this game. And I'm actually going to take advantage of this to move us to something I did this week, or I did in the last week, which is I got myself a Gear VR.
Nice!
They were on sale during PAX weekend for $100, and so I have no impulse control, and I bought myself a VR headset, because I've got the phone that works with it. I've got the S6, so... It was either last week I got, actually before the podcast, even of last week, but we didn't have time to talk about it, I got the advantage, I took it up with me when I went to visit my parents, and my phone actually had battery life. And so I put my parents, for anybody who doesn't know, this is the cheapest version of virtual reality headsets you can get. It's also...
Google Cardboard.
Google Cardboard too, but Google Cardboard doesn't count. Nobody actually considers it a proper VR headset, except for you. It's one of the cheapest. It's designed to use a phone instead of a powerful computer, which means it has a lot of limitations. But it's, you know, on as it stands, it's kind of its own fun little thing. And like I said, I have bad impulse control, and I wanted a VR headset. But last weekend, I got the opportunity to put my parents into VR headsets, into this thing. And I downloaded, there's a Jurassic World little experience where you have whatever that really long-necked dinosaur is.
Brachiosaurus.
Oh.
Yeah, that thing. Although it started with a P.
It's a stegosaurus.
Brachiosaurus.
It's not a stegosaurus. Stegosauruses are completely different.
The silent P.
I don't know what a stegosaur is.
Just like
regardless,
the pterodactyl.
You're sitting there and you're observing this long-necked dinosaur from the new Jurassic Park movie, and it wakes up and it's moving around and it's, you know, doing all the things a VR demo does. You can't move around because I don't have a Bluetooth controller, and the whole experiences are designed for people. There's a little touchpad right here, and so you have to kind of be able to control everything with this little touchpad. So there's not a lot of moving around. It's not like the Vive or the new Oculus with the new Oculus Touch controllers, or even the Morpheus where you have the PS... what are they called? The little
PlayStation Move.
Yeah, the Move controllers. I was going to call them the controllers with the glowing dildo end.
I always call them the Ratchet and the Clank.
Yeah, that would work too. And it was hilarious because, you know, my mom's like, oh, you're being stupid, whatever. So, and my dad's like, oh, I want to try that because my dad's a tech. He put it on, and then he was like, oh my god. And he goes, this is going to change everything. This is the future. Within 2 minutes of this, not, like, it's nothing mind-blowing. You're literally sitting there watching something happen to you. And he's like, this is amazing. And then I rolled him into a Cirque du Soleil video that's about 3 minutes long. And it's just you sitting on stage at a, you know, little Cirque du Soleil demo. And that alone, he was like, this is amazing. He also had the opportunity to go, you know, they have a movie theater mode. And it's, you put on the headset, and now you're staring at a 50-foot screen like you're in a movie theater. And you put on really good headphones that I intentionally bought because I was getting my Gear VR. My $30 headphones that are fancy and nice. And you put those on, and it feels like you're in a movie theater. And he was like, this is amazing. And my mom was making fun of us the entire time. And she was grumpy and needed to eat food.
To be fair, what you just described sounds like the loneliest movie theater experience possible.
There's that. And that's the other side of this is if I want to go, you know, it's the movies. The way I see it for the movie theaters is, you know, there's those movies that come out that you're like, you have to see it in the theater or you're never going to get the right experience.
Yeah.
That's what this is going to be able to do is, hey, go see Avatar, not The Last Airbender, but because we didn't talk about that live-action movie.
The James Cameron Avatar.
Go see James Cameron Avatar, and you put on this VR headset because you can't see it in theaters anymore. And all of a sudden you have a personal IMAX screen, and you're like, oh, this is what everybody was talking about.
That's true, but I do feel like, I mean, I saw Mad Max Fury Road in theaters 3 times. And I did it with different sets of friends each time, just because that group experience is really what it makes. The problem with VR is that it really is just coming up with new technological ways for us to be alone.
Yeah.
Which is sad.
I totally get that. It makes a... There's a good argument in both directions, and that's kind of where we have to hope like things like HoloLens and alternate reality can fill that gap. But what was funny is I put my mom in the VR headset afterward.
Mm-hmm.
Finally convinced her to try it out. Same set of demos. And she was also like, this is amazing. She was laughing at us, thinking we were stupid. And you look ridiculous when you're sitting there going, whoa, you know, you look ridiculous. But we put her in it, and she was immediately like, this is amazing. And I downloaded a Philharmonics, I think it's the one in Philadelphia. So you're at an orchestra that's playing. And put her in that, and she was like, this is, you know, it. You're all of a sudden, you're in an orchestra. And there's walkthrough art museums and, like, museums in, like, Korea and Vietnam that have put together 3D demos. The graphics are crap. It's a step backwards toward PS2-level graphics. But it doesn't really matter because there's a presence there that made a huge difference. But it was really interesting putting my parents in VR. Because I've tried every VR headset on the market with the exception of the newest Oculus. Like, that's my one thing I do at PAX, if I do nothing else, is I try all the new VR headsets.
Yeah.
And the ability to walk around is huge, and the ability of the controllers in your hands takes it another level. But the fact that this thing running off my phone and some of the 3D images, like the 360-degree pictures, jitter, which is a motion sickness problem that's huge, and even that's enough to put you in that place, is always really impressive to me. And I've been sold on VR forever, but it was interesting to sell my parents on it without trying.
Yeah.
This actually reminds me of an episode of Bones, oddly enough. I don't think anybody else here watches that show, and it's an older... Well,
where the killer is inside virtual reality.
No. There's this...
That's
it's
coming.
One of the episodes about a girl who... I believe she's poisoned due to somebody essentially taking poisoned bones, so like from cancer patients, and then doing bone marrow transplants. But
oh, wow.
I don't want to get too into the episode because it doesn't have too much to do with VR, but... The girl wants to be an artist. Like, that is her passion.
They just drop everything and just play Oculus Rift for, like, 20 minutes. And go, oh, that was cool. Well, that's how they fill the episode.
They're like, tech artist lady in the show, Angela. She creates, I forget what museum it is. I think it's the Louvre? I think it's the Louvre. But it's one of these super famous... just art museums that, like, artists would kill to go to type of thing. And she creates a virtual reality space, and she ends up putting the girl in the virtual reality headsets, yada, yada, yada. And it kind of gets this girl from, like, I'm going to die because of an asshat and this fucking sucks, to, you know, like, yes, this sucks, but I still really want to be an artist and... like, I'm going to try and get there type of thing. It's really inspirational, actually, at the end, and I'm explaining it horribly. But that's actually kind of how this, like, that's kind of what your parents' experience reminds me of, mm-hmm. because the girl at first with the virtual reality headset is kind of like, what the hell are you doing to me?
Yeah.
And like, her mind's blown, essentially.
There's a bit of a debate between virtual reality taking off again, because it's expensive. Mm-hmm. You need... $1,000 PC plus a $500 headset, or you need a specific phone and a $100 headset, but that's like the least optimal possible experience mm-hmm. for VR. And so there's a lot of talk about it being a gimmick, like 3D was.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, this is kind of like the jumping off point. Like, this is where virtual reality has actually become like a retail specific item where you can actually buy it. It's not just going to an amusement park and then there's an attraction that like involves mm-hmm. VR and creates that, similar to how like Disneyland used to have 3D movies, and it was just a part of Disneyland. Now 3D is in all theaters doing their whole thing. And granted, 3D is a gimmick, but they didn't find a proper way to kind of retail it to where no one really cared of whether or not they had 3D in their like their own room. Yeah. Whereas virtual reality, that all revolves around having your own personal VR headset and your own personal experience and everything like that. So
they also didn't
jump to the point where they're going to start innovating and start creating newer, cheaper ways in order to continue it. But granted, it also has to be successful at first. They have to show that there's a market for it.
And there's a lot of money behind it between Facebook, Sony, Valve and HTC, there's a huge amount of money behind it, and all three of the big players, Valve and HTC are partnered, Facebook owns Oculus, and Sony is doing their own thing, are really interestingly cognizant of the fact that if we make this a format war, like, you know, HD versus Blu-ray, we're going to kill the market. If we make this a, you have to own a specific headset for a specific game, we're going to kill the market. If we make it so that one headset is cheaper but crap, it's going to kill the market. And so there's been this really interesting in all these interviews coming up about it, almost unprecedented level of, we need to all work together because we know that if we don't, we've screwed this whole thing up.
See, I think with VR, it kind of it isolates you. It's a one-person experience, and I think that is why it's not going to take off. I think AR has a lot, has a higher probability of taking off because it can be, other people can see what you're seeing and interact with what you're doing, versus VR, as you said, you look ridiculous sitting there by yourself with this giant screen over your eyes.
I'm going to argue they're not mutually exclusive. Alternate reality is the evolution of the cell phone. VR is the evolution of my computer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, to that point, there also are ideas that allow it to not be such a, you know, exclusive kind of experience. And so I'm kind of going against the own point that I brought up earlier, is games like Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes is a very strong example of making virtual reality a, you know, a group activity. So for anyone who doesn't know, you're putting on a VR headset and you are looking at a bomb, and then your friends have a booklet of how to defuse this bomb. So you have to be communicating what you see on the device and what kind of puzzles are there to your friends so that they can tell you how to solve that puzzle and ultimately defuse the bomb before it explodes. I've tried it at PAX, and it's really fun.
I'm going to buy that because you can print out the manual.
That's a strong example of turning VR into a group activity. So, like, granted, that's one idea so far. They could think of more, but the fact that we haven't come up with more...
And actually, there is one more.
And well, I'm also thinking of, like, The Void, the virtual reality theme park that they're creating.
Yeah, that's what I was going to start talking about.
Gotcha. Yeah.
It's basically a blank warehouse that they built some basic architecture into. And then they put you in a VR headset, and you can easily put other people in there as track because you can track it. And the whole idea is, we own a warehouse, and if you walk inside, it's a bunch of walls and random, like, low, square, clear, basically nothing objects. But then we put people in VR headsets, and now they're, you know, breaching and clearing a room as a SWAT member, or they're going on an adventure, or all these other things. And it's a way for them to constantly change their whole thing, their whole business every few months or whatever, without ever actually changing anything in the physical world. It would all be digital change. And again, alternate reality sits in this line too, where AR can let you do a lot of the same things, a little differently, but it can let you do a lot of the same things. But it's really interesting and really cool that that'll be like another step for VR.
Yeah, what I thought was really cool is my brother actually came up with that exact same idea like a couple years ago before The Void was even announced, out of the fact that he saw that in Japan they had a Resident Evil theme park, and he wanted a Dead Space theme park for America. And I was like, I don't know how you can do that. Like, with Resident Evil, it seems like they're going all out on these, kind of that, and whatever. And he's like, no, do the Oculus. All the enemies are digital. and then just rig up like some sort of suit that they wear so you can feel like contact hits and there's like vibrations that shows where you're injured or anything like that. And hopefully the void takes off, because I think that can go down a really cool path of seeing like my dreams come true of being in specific movies or video games that I've always wanted to be a part of.
If there was a Dead Space video game, or like virtual reality experience, I'd probably shit my pants.
I think there would have to be janitors like on the clock to clean up all the shit that people would be, you know, leaving. All
right, let's get off tech and games and go to the other things that we tend to talk about, because there's probably a lot of people who are like, I don't understand any of this, and that's confusing.
It's the future, people! Hey, wake up!
But I'm following along, and I'm not into the same games as you guys are.
That's fair. And so, there's probably a lot of people who are saying, like, oh, but let's move a little bit forward, because we spent like a good 15 minutes on VR alone. Newman, what'd you make this week?
What, those black bean quesadillas?
Oh, you did that recipe?
Yeah. It was
good.
How
did it work out?
I realize I don't like garlic, so anything that has garlic, I'll probably not use a whole clove of garlic anymore. But
it's a lot of garlic.
That is a lot of garlic.
You were telling me you had some shopping mishaps again.
So yeah, I'm fucking basically in Mexico, and there's no tortillas at Fred Meyer.
Did you ask a clerk or anything? Because I don't believe that.
Yes.
Not the first time.
They pointed me to this little stand that had tiny bags of like 10 tortillas, and they're like as big as my hand. I have fairly large hands. So they like go around the circumference of my hand, and that's okay. All they have.
What'd you buy the first time?
Fucking uncooked ones, because I couldn't find those.
Yeah. How'd that go? Like, how long did it feed you for?
Couple days. I ran out of...
So, it's supposed to make, what, 10, 20 of the quesadilla things, right?
Maybe like 10. I ran out of mix before I ran out of tortillas, but I went back and bought non-uncooked ones.
Mm-hmm. Also, serious question. Did you use store-bought taco seasoning, or did you make their version of taco seasoning?
I completely forgot that. So, B, none okay. of the above.
Also, just as a side note, I think you said yourself you're like really close to Mexico, so that's probably why you ran out of tortillas, is all the Mexican residents are buying up all the tortillas, and that's
it's
just
San
all they
Diego,
have.
Guys. Come on.
Well,
it's not Santa Fe.
It's Mexico 2.0. We'll call it that.
No, that's New Mexico.
I'm the Bellingham equivalent of California.
We have a lot of tortillas here, so especially in our Fred Meyers. So I don't believe that.
Wise,
I'm sorry.
So like, I'm as close to Mexico as Bellingham is to Canada. What do Canadians have? French? Do you just have like French dip?
We have really good chocolate.
No,
expensive
Canada
milk.
Just has the most tortillas out of anybody because no one's buying them. There's no Mexican residents buying up all their tortillas.
Honestly, when I was in Calgary, I was surprised by how easy it was to find decent refried black beans and decent tortillas, even though the brands were different. It was really surprising how easy it was to find those things. And then I realized that Calgary has a really large South American population. Mm-hmm. A lot of Argentinians and a lot of Chileans in Calgary, which was weird. And once again made me wish I could actually speak Spanish like the rest of my family.
Newman, you have headphones. The last name Pereira and you can't speak Spanish?
Pereira. And no, I can't.
Mi español es muy
malo.
Cool. Well, okay, and... But anyway, so other than tortillas, was there any other mishaps or did it work out?
No, it was fairly easy.
And he didn't send me the recipe by Thursday, before Thursday, so that's why I didn't go up. You have to send it to me. I'm not going to do all your work for you.
You have to formally let him know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, the chair went down.
You're a contributor to the site. You need to provide your content.
While we're on this topic, though, how did everybody's Google That challenge go? Both the one that Doc proposed, which when I Googled the question, I found it in the first link.
Yeah, the moment the podcast was over, he found the answer, and I got very upset.
How did that side of that go? Although most of the people here heard me find the answer. And then how did the avoiding of, oh, let me just Google it, go for people.
Well, I actually have
a... Oh, sorry, Ryan, I cut you off. Did you say that?
Well, I just don't talk to anyone other than my boss, so...
There's that.
Well, I had a pretty good experience with it. So I was hanging out with my friend Anna, and we were just talking about certain things, and we eventually ended up talking about childhood. And I remembered the first time I ever held $50 in my hand because my mom made, like, a really big deal. It's like, this is $50. You can't lose it. You got to save it. Like, do that whole mom thing. And I had a specific reason why I wanted that $50 is because I was buying Star Fox Adventures for the GameCube, and I was super excited. And then I was like, man, when was it when I first held – how old was I when I held my first $50? So I was about to go, and I was like, nope, we are going to sit here and talk and think about when the GameCube was released as well as when the game was released and decipher how old I was. And so we kind of did this whole backtracking. It was like, oh, the GameCube, I believe, was released in 2001, and then the game was released in 2002, and it was around September. So at that time, I wouldn't have turned because my birthday's in December. So, and then we ended up being only off by 1 year. I think it came out in, like, 2002, and really? And the GameCube came out in 2001. So I actually got my first $50 when I was 2002.
I similarly, right after we finish the podcast, I always run, well, I actually am not running this, and I'm kind of glad, but we always do game night here, and we're doing the Dragon Age RPG, but we have, like, we're doing it early in the day because we can, but that gives us, like, 7 hours of RPG time, which is too much for just about anybody. And so we had, you know, kind of finished up, and we were just hanging out and talking, and it was a similar, I don't remember what it was anymore. Because it was, but it came up, and I was like, oh, yeah, let me just, nope, I'm going to put that away, and we're going to talk about it for a second. And, you know, that conversation ran off as well. But it was that thing of, I had the phone in my hand, and I went, turned it on, looked at it, went, no, wait, and put it away. And we kind of had to do, it was a movie thing again, where we had to just kind of follow the line down the movies. Sunny?
So, apparently in the group, I'm one of the rare people who doesn't automatically Google things. And so this was, like, this challenge was not a challenge for me. It was actually more irritating because I would be like, I feel like I'm supposed to Google things, but I'm not. Well, no, because part of my brain, because of the challenge, would be like, oh, you should Google something. Because that's what I normally don't do.
Encyclopedia brain, being able to know stuff.
Well, no, it's not that I know stuff. It's that I like talking to people. So it's not a hassle. But so, because of the challenge part, for some reason, because I normally don't Google things, it was like, I should Google this. And then I'd be like, wait, no, that's actually, no, I'm just supposed to do what I normally do. So it was normal for me. I had fun. I cooked a couple recipes this week without Googling stuff, which was interesting. So that's how I challenged myself, I guess. Yeah. Stuff came out good.
Yeah, no, I actually did something similar along those lines. Is when I visit my friend Anna, I always drive. She lives in Renton, and we always meet like once a month, once every month and a half, have a movie night, hang out and talk. And just recently, this was the first time I tried driving back without using my GPS. And
nice.
So at this point, I was just like, oh, yeah, no, I should know the path by this point. I don't need a GPS in order to get myself out of here. And so I was actually able to, you know, leave my phone off to the side, not press with anything, and just, you know, make my way home. And I figured if I took a wrong turn, then it just becomes a, like, spontaneous adventure and say, all right, let's get home alive today.
Which, honestly, I feel like is a better way to drive than with a phone in your hand. Because, I mean...
It's on my lap. What are you talking about?
For me, I put it on my
hand, lap, whatever. But, you know, just in general, like, it's probably safer to drive without a cell phone, especially after all the things that I've read about them, even if it is Google Maps. But
I'm really bad about doing that.
Oh, no, you take a wrong turn, and you end up somewhere fun and new. Like,
I'm really bad about following the law.
All right, look, I live in Seattle, so somewhere new isn't exactly always fun. I can turn a corner and be like, oh, no.
I mean, this is true, but still.
I live downtown.
You know what I mean, though? Like, it... Oh, no, you take a wrong turn?
See, I tried myself to using the GPS the first 3 times while going to a new place. Like, for example, work, I used it to get there and back the first 3 times. I'm like, all right, I should know it by this point, trying to limit my cell phone usage while driving. Mm-hmm. I still use it all the time, but it's not from Google Maps. But that's a different story. But, yeah, I just, like, first 3 times, after that, I should have it down or a good gist of where I'm going to be like, okay, I can just go around the block here, and then I'm mm-hmm. right back where I
Yeah, a lot like you. I'm lucky because usually if I've been to a location once, especially if I drove or I walked there, I can get back there without any problems. My joke is I never know where I'm going, but I always know where I've been. I can almost always perfectly backtrace
my
steps.
That's a Bon Jovi song.
It could be. I can always trace my steps backwards. Bon Jovi. Yeah, of course. But I get confused and lost going. So this week I started working my nannying job. And I've got some great stories already from those kids. One of which is, can we eat in your car? I'm like, yeah, go ahead. He goes, cool, Mom never lets us eat in the Porsche.
Yeah.
It's that kind of kid. It's that kind of family. I mean, they can afford to pay me $17 an hour.
Oh, dang. Okay.
So, and I made it $275 this week, barely, you know, and it's not like I did any work, really. I hung out with two kids.
What are you, $20 an hour or 20 hours a week?
I'm not even that. I'm at like 14 or 15 hours a week right now. The number's going to go up as I get a hang of being back in school.
Gotcha.
Which is a whole other thing. But yeah, it was me going to their house or me going to their new location, you know, this new place I had to take them. And it's like, I go there. Okay, I know where it is. The only other time I use Google now is when I'm like, I don't want to take the main road because traffic sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And getting up onto Redmond Ridge, traffic really sucks. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, I know a lot of this area because I grew up in Redmond, and so basically everything from Woodinville to Fall City down to Issaquah and like up to like Washington and Bellevue is my hometown, so I can drive almost anywhere on back roads and kind of know where I'm going. But that was kind of a lot like Newman, where I was like, okay, use Google like once, maybe twice, and then I'm like, okay, I know where I'm going. And then just kind of don't use Google, or don't use my phone for Google anymore, and still irresponsibly do other things that I really shouldn't be doing.
See, for me...
Bad habits.
I had OG TomTom GPS for a while, because I had my old phone broke, and I was stuck with an iPhone 4, and that was a piece of shit, so... It like this TomTom took me on the most convenient route. It wasn't necessarily the quickest. And I learned that road to get to school is fairly easy. But then I got my phone and I like typed into something that was actually ended up being close to work anyways. And it took me through the city. And it ended up being like 5 minutes faster. But I'm like, this is going through downtown. And all of a sudden I just pop out of nowhere. I'm going to stick, even though it's like 5 minutes slower, I'm going to stick with the easier route just because I know it and I don't want to relearn something and get confused.
I will say, though, Google is a godsend when you're trying to find something in a city.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's gotten so good, and now it's integrated with public transportation, like one bus away here in the West, in Seattle area, which is the app that is real-time updates for buses. They integrated with Google. Or whatever the you know system that they use, Google integrated with as well. So you get real-time bus updates with Google. Not just, here's the schedule, it's here's when the bus is going to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been busing to Bellevue College because I don't want to deal with parking. And I walk 5 minutes that way, get on a bus, one exit, and then I'm at BC. Although when it starts raining, we'll see how much I keep doing that. When fall actually gets here. But like all these little things that Google does where I'm like, okay, navigate to Bellevue College, and I'm like, I know how to get there, but when's the bus going to be here? Mm-hmm. Oh, hey, there's a faster bus over there. Okay, grab that faster bus. Things like that. None of that is to bash. Like, none of what we've said. Google's amazing, and Google Maps is amazing.
Google is very useful. I would be sad if suddenly it went poof out of my life forever, but I also don't feel the need to constantly use it because... Mm-hmm.
Well, some of my favorite memories from way back when I actually had a girlfriend were going south. I'm helping them move their stuff from a storage locker. She goes, take this exit. Take the exit. We get about 30 minutes down, and we're out, down by Burien.
Mm-hmm.
And out into the eastern side. So we're headed out. Actually, I've been there. But, we're headed out toward, Enumclaw or something. And we're trying to get down south of Emerald Downs instead. And so we're completely off course. And about 30 or 40 minutes later, we realize that we're off course.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm like, we're headed east. How did this happen? But, we'd been talking the entire time. It was fun. Yeah. And then it took us another 10 minutes to find somewhere to turn around. Because we were out. And that's also when you realize that in the Seattle area, you go about 30 minutes the wrong direction, you are in the middle of nowhere. You get outside the little clustered area around the sound, and there's nothing all of a sudden. You're like, oh.
Well, unless you're trying to go out to the middle of nowhere and go the other way, then you're in everywhere.
Well, yeah. Thank you for that sage wisdom.
See, I love Google, and I rely off of Google so much, and it's like, my whole thing is, someone is going to have all your information.
Net security, that's a whole other
with
thing.
With how much, data we put on the internet, someone somewhere is going to have all your information. So I'd rather have all this information be stored in one place, under one service, where they can tailor different parts of my life to give me new stuff that I may not know. So, say I was Googling, WebMD symptoms, and they detected I was at the doctor, they can take those two things and say, here's how to get this pill that might tailor to you, to what you want. If you don't need it...
so you can solve those penis problems that you're having.
Micropenis.
Pills. Oh, God.
But it's someone's
got an Amazon local email, which sends you coupons and stuff for wherever for a steam cleaning carpet for 3 or 6 rooms, 2-day parking at SeaTac, garage door tune-up, and then there's 60-minute acupuncture. And the most bizarre thing, none of that's tailored to me. The most bizarre thing is there's 10 jiu-jitsu courses, which is more or less tailored to me, to Miller's Martial Arts Academy, which is where I got my black belt. There's a picture of my instructor here. That was one of the weirdest moments I've had. Mm-hmm. And I just pulled it up because to kind of prove the point of it's tailored to me, but also my Google search history and my Amazon search history are garbage because I constantly am looking things up. And I was like, it's not tailored to me. And then here's my old instructor staring at me in this email, and that's just weird. It's a really good price, though.
So come on down, try your 10 jiu-jitsu classes. Alex is making a plug for his old martial arts.
Right?
Sponsor, I wish.
This week's sponsor is Jiu-Jitsu.
All right, we're hitting... We've just broken
right,
over 40
that was
minutes,
a
so...
On none of the topics that we had listed for the week.
Yeah. I guess we'll save some of the other ones. Doc, what is Selfies versus Sharks and Good Burger Reunion?
Okay, so... I wanted to bring up the Selfies versus Sharks thing because I've saw a lot of articles online talking about how the death toll for this year for selfies is greater than the death toll for sharks. And so a lot of people started saying that selfies were more dangerous than sharks, and which is not necessarily true. I just think that humans could be outsmarted by sharks in certain cases. The fact that we are too... stupid to realize that we shouldn't be taking pictures in dangerous areas. And I think this one, granted, sounded more like an accident than anything. Someone was doing a selfie at the Taj Mahal, and I believe he tripped and fell down the stairs, and it ended up being a fatal thing, which is a tragic scenario for him and his family. But, I mean, at a certain point, there are certain people that are doing these selfies in, very dangerous scenarios where they really shouldn't be. It's not really worth it, either. It's just a picture of you doing this. You could have a friend do it while you do the dangerous activity, but why limit yourself by focusing your vision towards your phone as well as doing something one-handed like that?
Can we just say how embarrassing it would be dying by falling downstairs? That'd suck.
It happens to a lot of people, actually.
That's how I fractured my finger, so, and I fell upstairs. So I've.
That's how my mom messed up her like her entire right side. All right,
so let's change it. It's stairs versus sharks. Stairs are more dangerous than sharks.
Well, the reason why I fell upstairs was because I stepped on, you know, those little like cat toy mouse things. I stepped on one of those, and it was just the right like rolling under my foot, and it
okay.
I blame my cat.
All right,
but I fractured my finger, so that was fun.
We don't have enough time for the whole selfie culture debate.
That's fine.
Yeah, that one, because that one, just the way people were talking about it, of selfies being more dangerous than sharks, I just thought it was a really stupid way of saying it.
Although, the selfie culture is a pretty good one to say for next week, so we're going to do that.
There's as well a lot about selfie culture.
Of texts. That was another one. And then the other thing that I want to talk about was the Good Burger reunion. I don't know if any of you guys saw this, but they actually did a Good Burger reunion on Jimmy Fallon earlier this week. So we got to see Kel Mitchell and Kenan Thompson from Good Burger, from the show All That, from the 90s. Like a deep throwback. And yes, Alex, you're waving your hand like
I don't know what any of this is.
You don't? This proves my point. This is why I wanted to bring it up. Is Good Burger is such a niche knowledge. I loved it when I was a kid. I was watching All That and the Good Burger movie and all this, and they specifically brought this reunion in to Jimmy Fallon to bring in a younger audience. I would classify us as the younger audience, but obviously there's only one person out of this group of people that actually knows what Good Burger is.
I know what Good Burger is.
Okay, thank you, Ryan.
So half.
Yeah.
So half of this group, being the younger audience, only knows what Good Burger is, and yet this is something that they're bringing in order to draw a bigger audience. And it really didn't make any sense to me where it's like, oh, we need to tap the Good Burger market for Jimmy Fallon. We really need to find that niche group.
But if it's a niche group that is regularly watching Jimmy Fallon, because like, there's the difference between the overall group that is potential watchers and potential viewers versus the people that are regularly watching, because the people that are regularly watching could be like a pretty large percentage of just like, you know, they already know about Good Burger.
Yeah, and see, and that's just it. If I were to show you guys this sketch that they did, you wouldn't think it's funny at all. They're really grasping at nostalgia in order to, you know, create their entertainment for the day, rather than creating something new that has humor that appeals to the younger market. They're just grabbing these old identities and saying, remember these? Remember these jokes that they did? That's funny, mm-hmm. right? And so that was kind of just what I wanted to talk about out of the fact that it just made no sense to me as to why that was their specific get. Like, why Good Burger specifically? Why the audience of people who knows that? How does this appeal to Jimmy Fallon fans in any way?
Probably cool. Because they did polls.
Well, maybe. I mean, yeah, market research almost.
Yeah. But
probably didn't do what they thought it would do.
The audience that was there during the recording was going nuts. Like, oh man, he's doing the grape nose boy bit, which just sounds insane when I say that out loud.
That reminds
I've seen some. My dad's been sending me articles about podcasts and all these other things, and he sent me one, and it was how to appeal to millennials, because nobody understands that that older generation, that marketing arm doesn't understand it at all. And one of the things was, remember, they have a short attention span. So your media must be willing, you know, you must be willing to understand that you have to get their attention briefly and quickly and then expect it to fade off again. And I was just laughing because most millennials I know are the most, and they're like, they have no brand loyalty.
And that's where you zoned out and stopped listening to his conversation.
No, it was and it was just really funny to me because I'm like, most of the millennials I know tend to be way more brand loyal if they really like the brand.
Oh,
and if you can build a personal relationship with them, they're going to stay focused on your stuff a lot longer than anybody else will.
Even if it costs more, honestly.
Because
mm-hmm. if we find a brand that treats us right, that doesn't treat us like just little itty-bitty mindless shoppers, occasionally provides good deals, listens to our feedback, like yada, 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 I have purchased things, I'm not even kidding, that were probably twice as expensive as I could have purchased them for because I liked a brand and I was like, well, yeah, I'm paying more,
Yeah, or
but
it's
they actually like listen to the consumer. They're actually listening to what somebody like me who is buying one thing has to say.
Yeah.
That's Apple's whole selling like plan. They're more expensive. They come out with a brand new one each year, but you always need to have the new one.
I think that's basically bullshit.
Even Microsoft has the branding idea of one Microsoft, where it's like if you have a Microsoft product, you're more inclined to get all the other Microsoft stuff. So if you have a Windows operating system, you're going to want to use OneDrive, and you're going to want to get a Windows phone because everything syncs up and it's all that's one. Cool. Isn't that convenient? You should be a part of this brand. That's how Microsoft does it.
But yeah, there's been some interesting appeals toward getting the millennial crowd that has been weird. But we are at almost 50 minutes now, which is
okay.
Like 15 minutes longer than our last one and about on par with our first one. So we're going to start wrapping it up. Same thing as last time, I guess. Where can people find your stuffs if there's stuffs you want them to find? Doc?
Follow me on Twitter, @ Doc Von Derwin. And add me on Facebook if you're interested. I post a lot of my content towards podcastlostinspace.com. So if you stay to that website, you'll see a lot of what I write about. YouTube, D-Pat Derwin. Check out Mega Mormon. It's a movie that I created in high school. Very weird, very funny. Check it out.
Ryan.
I don't do anything.
Nothing? All right.
Add me, I don't know, add me on Facebook, I guess.
Twitter. Twitter's a better one. What's your Twitter? Ryan.
What?
Handle?
Oh, sorry. Oh, you just froze out. Numinator29.
Senny, anything?
Well, start looking at the blog, podcastlostinspace.org or com?
.com.
And sometime, I believe, in the next week? Right?
Yes.
In the next week, we're going to start posting actual blog posts by people like me, Doc, Alexander, maybe Newman, I don't know. But the rest of us are really going to start posting, and we're going to have some more detailed stuff, I guess, because in these podcasts, we kind of overarch over a lot of topics in a fairly short amount of time, honestly, for the time that we could talk about them.
All right, and you can find anything related to Podcast Lost in Space. Twitter is Pliss Official, all caps, capital O, official, no spaces, no underscores. You can find us on Twitch @ Pliss Official. You can find us, of course, at podcastlostinspace.com. I remembered it this time, even though everybody else pitched it too. And you can find us on YouTube @ capital T, Pliss Official. And you'll find archives of these podcasts on YouTube. Maybe we're going to start doing other things. I've got some requests from other people who want to maybe try to do a vlog series or something. We'll see. But like Seneca was saying, we're finally into the first month of a normal blog schedule, which means the recipe going up Monday is going to be the recipe that Newman's going to do that week. He's going to make stew. The recipe... Maybe. Or on Thursdays, you're going to see us with a blog post, and it's going to roll like that. Sundays are going to be the podcast. Okay. Saturdays may or may not be Twitch, me streaming a game on Twitch. I haven't decided, and I like to sleep, and Saturdays are my sleep day. And then you can find me @ Redbeard on Twitter. I have a writer's page, Alexander, on Facebook. You can also find us, Podcast Lost in Space, on Facebook.
Holy shit.
Remember we're that? In a lot of places.
Yeah, we're kind of all over the place.
Same thing. It's kicking in.
All right. So, thanks for watching, guys.
Bye, people.
All of this will be going up. Hopefully, we'll have music this week. We'll see.
Yes.
See you, Space Cowboys.
Bye. And really quick, if you guys noticed, our lovely intro and outro music is thanks to Peter Scott's. And you can find him @ peterscott-3 on soundcloud.com. Just wanted to say a big thank you, and it makes the podcast that much better.